have sailed. I have moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
This is Bruce Kaplan, and you are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 103.1, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge.
Be a hot time in the town of Berlin when the Yanks go marching in. I want to be their boy, Fred's in jaw when they take old Berlin. There'll be a hot time in the town of Berlin when the Brooklyn boys begin to take the joint apart and tear it down when they take old Berlin. They're gonna start a row and show 'em how we paint the town back in Kokomo. They're gonna take a hike through Hitler's Reich and change that hire to what you know, Joe. There'll be a hot time in the town of Berlin when the Yanks go marching in. You could never keep 'em happy down on the farm after they take Berlin.
There'll be a hot time in the town of Berlin when the Yanks go marching in. I want to be their boy, bring some joy when they take over Berlin.
And may I join you?
There'll be a hot time in the town of Berlin when the Brooklyn boys begin to take the joint apart, tear it down when they take over Berlin. They're going to start a row and show them how you paint the town back in Michigan. They're going to take a hike to Hitler's Reich and change the aisle to give me some skin. There'll be a hot time
in the town of Berlin when the Yanks go marching in. You're never going to keep them happy down on the farm after they take Berlin.
There'll be a hot time in the town of Berlin when the Yanks
go marching in.
I want to be their boy, spread some joy when
they take Berlin, the Yanks go marching in.
There'll be a hot time in the town of Berlin when the Brooklyn boys begin.
The boys begin
to take the joint apart, tear it down when they take Berlin.
There'll be a hot time in the town of Berlin when the Yanks go marching in.
You could never keep them happy down on the farm.
The life of these would never please, they shudder with alarm.
No, you couldn't keep them happy down on the farm after they take Berlin.
This is Bruce Kaplan, and you are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 103.1, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge. Tonight, we have two wonderful mysteries for you. One of the mysteries stars the great Lucille Ball. And it's really a great mystery, but there's some comedy in it too. And another mystery is This Is Your FBI. And because this is Memorial Day, and we're thinking about or remembering the people that have given their lives so that we Americans can live in freedom, and also we're thinking about the wars, we decided to play a World War II episode of This Is Your FBI, and it's all about draft dodging. It's a really interesting mystery, and I think you'll enjoy it. And the Lucille Ball is also from World War II, but I don't think there'll be any mention of it. If you want to reach me, just write to Bruce at radiomasterpieces.com, and I'll be sure and get in touch with you. Now, let's enjoy our wonderful mysteries. And just remember, you're on Valley 103.1, and it's serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge. Thank you so much for tuning in. Just have a most happy, wonderful holiday weekend.
A Night to Remember. It stars Brian Donlevy as Jeffrey Troy and Lucille Ball as his wife Nancy.
The address was 39 Gay Street, New York. I had a strange feeling about the place right from the start. First the scream, and then...
Jeff, there's something crawling across the floor.
You know, an artist might call that Greenwich Village. A social worker might call it the slums. Sure, I pointed all that out to Nancy, but she was sort of sensitive, I guess, because, you see, she'd rented the place without even asking me, and, well, anyway, you know how women are.
Now, Jeff, I've said it all before.
Many times, darling.
And I'll say it again. If you're going to write a novel about Greenwich Village, then
you ought to live in Greenwich Village.
You funny man.
Quite frankly, I didn't like number 39 Gay Street. I don't think you would have liked it either. One of those musty old brownstone fronts they'd cut up into small apartments. And when we went up the steps that night and entered the hall, our landlord wasn't exactly overjoyed to see us.
I wasn't expecting you, Mrs. Troy. And not till Thursday.
Well, I thought as long as the apartment was vacant. You see, my husband is a writer, and he's very anxious to get to work.
Yes, we'll be glad to pay you for the 3 extra days.
No, it isn't that. No. You see, I haven't had the lights turned on, and the apartment isn't cleaned yet. And, perhaps if you'd have stayed at a hotel tonight, by tomorrow I could have everything ready.
Oh, but our furniture's on the way from Connecticut. It ought to be here in an hour or so. I guess we'll just have to... Jeff, what was that?
Well, it wasn't the 6 o'clock whistle.
It came from downstairs.
Hey, Mrs. Troy, I assure you it's nothing at all.
Mr. Turner, it happened again.
Well, what happened?
Down in the basement, that thing, whatever it is, it crawled across my feet.
Stop that, Mrs. Salter. Stop it at once. Now, you go to my apartment and wait for me there.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Say... What did she mean?
You mustn't mind her, Mr. Troy. She's my janitor, you see. Oh. An excellent worker, strong as an ox, but when she works in the basement, she gets hallucinations. That's absurd, isn't it?
Yeah, silly. Well, if you'll lend us some candles, Mr. Turner, we'll have a look at our little nest. Come along, Nancy. Let you and me go up, huh?
Jeff, It isn't up, it's down.
Well, then let's go down and see our little... Down?
I forgot to tell you, it's the basement apartment.
It didn't look so bad by candlelight. The living room was pretty fair size. One door opening on the street and another opening on the hall. And the bedroom had a door that opened right on a garden. That's what had Nancy so excited.
Oh, just imagine, darling, a garden right outside your bedroom in the heart of New York. Why, we can even have a victory garden.
Mm-hmm. Good soil, too. Lots of iron in it.
How do you know?
Well, isn't that a horseshoe lying there?
Jeff, you found the lucky piece. Pick it up.
Where'll I wear it?
You just hold it tight and make a wish.
Oh. Okay, I made it.
What'd you wish?
Well, while we're waiting for our furniture, I wish we could find a restaurant where they still have some steaks. Cute name for a restaurant. Polly's Stable. Must be a good place to put on the feed bag.
You funny man.
Good evening, folks. How's everything?
Well, the martinis are swell, but I need some toast.
Toast? What kind? White or rye?
Oh, it doesn't matter. I just want to stick it under the leg of this table.
Look, Jeff, while you order dinner, I'll go and phone the cleaners about our drapes.
Well, I'm pretty hungry, Nancy. Will you be back soon?
Uh-huh. And 2 shakes of a dry martini.
Hey, listen, I've had about enough stalling. You meet me tonight or it's going to be curtains.
Gosh, that's in the next booth.
Yeah, let's meet the same place as before. 39 Gay Street, the basement apartment. You heard me. That's all.
39 Gay Street. The basement apartment. Oh, gee. Jeff, while I was in that telephone booth, excuse me, I didn't realize the waitress was still here.
She isn't the waitress. She owns the joint. Darling, meet Polly. Polly, meet Darling.
Hello, darling. How do you do?
Now, Nancy, you were saying...
Jeff, you see that man at the bar with the hair growing down his forehead and the scar on his chin?
Uh-huh.
Well, I heard him threatening someone in the next booth, telling him to meet him in our apartment.
Well, they couldn't meet in the telephone booth, so I guess if they want... Our apartment?
I distinctly heard him say 39 Gay Street, the basement apartment.
39 Gay Street?
Yes, do you know the place?
Oh, sure. I live there myself on the second floor.
Oh, you do? Well, then maybe you know who that...
Excuse me, we're awful busy tonight. See you later, folks. Enjoy your dinner.
Jeff, she acted so strangely. What's it all about?
Oh, I think I better find out. I'm going over and have a talk with that guy.
No, Jeff, don't.
Well, now you just wait there, Nancy. Hiya, pal.
I'm not your pal, and keep your hands to yourself.
Hey, just a minute. Who do you think you're shoving?
Don't like it, huh?
No.
Well, maybe you'll like this better.
Jeff, darling, open your eyes. Speak to me.
Is that guy still here?
No. He's gone. He ran out.
Okay, honey. What'll we talk about?
My hero. Now you'll need two steaks, one for your stomach and one for your eye.
Huh? Home, sweet home. And there's no place on earth I'd rather not be.
Jeff, It's awfully dark in here.
Yeah, lucky we bought these extra candles. Yep, there we are. That gives us some light.
But don't you understand? I left a candle lit when we went out to dinner.
Oh, well, it must have blown out. Any little draft could... Ouch!
What's the matter?
Oh, my foot. I stubbed my toe. Hey, look. It's that darn horseshoe. My lucky piece, no less.
That's odd. What's it doing on the floor? You put it on the windowsill.
Say, that's right. How did it get on the...
Jeff, listen, you hear that noise?
Sounds like water running in the bathroom. I'd better have a look, huh?
Hey, not without me.
All right. Here. Put the candle down on the floor.
Right.
That's it. Steady now. You with me, Nancy? Nancy!
Jeff, look! That candle is moving.
Gosh.
Hey, what's so funny?
Look, it's a turtle. It must have come in from the garden. You put the candle right down on its back. Hey, I'll bet that's what's been scaring Mrs. Salter, too. Come on, now let's have a look at that bathroom. There you are, Nancy. You see? There's some water running out of the tub.
That's what I mean. Where'd the water come from?
Well,
we didn't fill that tub.
That's right, didn't. Oh, I know. That guy from the restaurant came in here to take a bath, but he was very modest, so he blew out the candle. And he pitched horseshoes to dry himself off.
You funny man.
Oh, well, there's no use getting all upset, Nancy. What's that?
Maybe he's back again. Jeff, don't go.
Don't worry, I'm not.
Anybody home? Got a load of furniture here.
Oh, it's just the furniture.
Yeah. Imagine being scared by an overstuffed chair. It was quiet enough the rest of that night, but in the morning, things really started to happen. First of all, the police woke us up.
Sorry to get you folks out of bed, but the neighbors complained. Fella lying in your garden without any clothes.
In our garden? Well, he's got a nerve. Well, go on out there and get him out of there. Wake him up.
Well, I wish I could. He happens to be dead.
And then later, when they had us look at the corpse, Nancy had to go and blurt...
Why, Jeff! Jeff, it's the man you had a fight with in the restaurant last night.
Now, just let me get this straight, Mr. Troy, about this exchange of blows last night.
Inspector, there wasn't any exchange. Only two blows were struck. He struck my husband, and my husband struck the floor.
Ah, no, Nancy, I pushed him once, didn't I?
Now, what's one little push? You didn't murder him, did you?
Oh, me?
Say, Inspector.
Yes, Balling?
I got a little dope for you. The guy's name was Kaufman, Lewis Kaufman. Had an apartment up on the third floor.
Who told you that?
Oh, you wouldn't guess in a million years. Remember during Prohibition, this place was a speakeasy? Joe's place, it was called. And Joe had a partner.
Eddie Turner.
Yeah, that's right. Remember, we grilled him, and when Joe disappeared, well, little Eddie's still around. In fact, he's a landlord at this joint.
That's interesting.
Inspector Hankins?
Yeah?
My name is Lingle. I have an apartment in this building.
That's right, Chief. I got his name on the list.
I want you to know, sir, if I can help in any way.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Lingle. We may call on you.
Oh, I'm in the phone book. The Lingle Art Studios. Any time at all, Inspector. Any time at all.
Inspector, if you don't mind my putting in a word.
Not at all, Mr. Troy.
Well, I think you should have questioned him after that conversation my wife overheard. You should question everyone in this house.
Mr. Troy, remember, you live here, too.
Oh, that's silly. Jeff isn't the murderer's type.
Well, I didn't say he was. Come on, Balling, let's go out and look at Kaufman's apartment.
Wait a minute, Inspector. Just look at these books. Murder in the Laundry, Murder in the Air, Murder in the Subway. Must be a couple of dozen of them. Somebody got murder on the brain.
Mr. Troy, you said you were a novelist? You didn't by chance,
You bet. I wrote every one of them. Murder Mysteries by Jeffrey Yort. That's my name spelled backwards. T-R-O-Y-Y-O-R-T.
You spell that backwards, too.
K-N-I-S-T-I-N...
Boy. Mr. Hankins, you're not a detective. You're a critic.
Well, I guess that made me pretty mad. Made me want to show the inspector up, so while Nancy was throwing some breakfast together, I sort of wandered through the halls looking for clues. That was how I ran into Polly, you know, the girl we met the night before. Well, one thing led to another, and then she asked me in to have some coffee, and that's when it happened. I noticed a letter lying on the coffee table, and quite casually, I read the address. To Mr. Andrew Brule, 507 West 12th. Only Polly seemed to get upset, and she made a grab for the letter, but I got it first, and just to tease her, you know, just for a gag. There we are, sort of wrestling for it, and I guess she has her arms around me when all of a sudden Nancy shows up.
Oh, excuse me, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Oh, that's all right, sweet, we were just kidding around.
Yes, over this letter.
Well, yeah. When you get through playing post office, Mr. Troy, your breakfast is ready.
Say, I think she's mad.
Better go and clean. Nancy! Oh, Nancy, wait a minute.
You stay away from me, you bluebeard.
Oh, Nancy, you're not jealous, darling. That's silly.
You're never jealous, I suppose.
Of course I'm not.
How about when the butcher saved me that roast? You weren't jealous. Oh, no, just mad enough to kill, that's all.
Darling, shh.
I will not shh. You were mad enough to kill.
Say, Mr. Troy, I want to speak to you.
Oh, now look what you've done.
Let's get down to your apartment, folks. A few more questions I'd like to ask. Troy, did you ever see this horseshoe before?
Oh, sure. That's my lucky piece.
Wasn't so lucky for Lewis Kaufman.
What do you mean?
I mean there's dried blood on it. And these strands of hair are from the dead man's head.
Wait a minute. Are you saying that this horseshoe was the murder weapon?
Now you're getting hot, and I do mean hot.
Oh, say, Chief, we checked the fingerprints on that horseshoe. They're his, all right.
Whose?
Yours.
Oh.
Okay, Troy, get your hat and coat.
Wait a minute. He hasn't done anything. He wouldn't hurt a fly. Jeff, darling, don't go. You haven't even had your breakfast.
That's all right, baby. Don't you worry. I had a cup of coffee upstairs with Polly.
Oh, with Polly. Take him along, Inspector, and I hope he gets light.
Well, they kept me down at headquarters all that day. But then some new development turns up, so that evening they let me go. Nothing else happened till late that night. I guess I must have been sleeping pretty soundly when...
Jeff, wake up.
What's the matter now?
There's somebody in this apartment. I can hear him walking around.
Well, tell him to sit down. In this apartment?
Shh. Hear that sound?
I wish I didn't.
Don't go out there. You might get killed.
Yeah, no. But if I just stay here and listen, I'll die of fright.
Your golf bag is standing here in the corner.
Huh?
Maybe you can hit him with a golf club.
I don't know. I could never hit a ball. Oh, well, we'll try it. Come on.
There he is, Jeff.
Huh?
I can see him outlined against the window.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Don't move now. I've got you.
Oh, Jeff. Sure, you got him, only he didn't know about it. Now he's gone.
This is no time to argue, Nancy. Turn on the light.
Okay.
Hey, Nancy, look. He dropped his knife.
And knocked over the screen. If men weren't so clumsy, they'd...
Say, honey, this isn't our screen.
I know. Mr. Turner lent it to me to cover the window till our drapes got back.
Well, there must be something about this screen that... Sure. There it is. He was scraping something off with that knife. See it, Nancy? Something 07 West 12th Street.
That first number looks like it might be a 5.
507 West 12th. Hey, that sounds familiar. I wonder where I... Wait a minute. I know. 507 West 12th. That was what was on Polly's letter.
The one she had to wrestle you for?
And the name was Brule, Andrew Brule, and somebody didn't want us to know it.
Well, it wasn't Polly, it was a man.
Yeah, and it wasn't Turner, he's not that big.
Listen, who's that?
Why don't you ask?
Yes, who's there?
It's me, Mr. Lingle. I heard a noise, I thought there might be some trouble. Can I be of any help?
Well, if you find a stray heart in your throat, it's mine.
It's all right, Mr. Lingle. Everything's under control, thank you.
Oh, that's fine. Good night.
Such a nice man, always wanting to help.
Well, that doesn't answer the question of Mr. Brule. Say, Nancy, call me a cab, will you? I'm going in and put some clothes on.
Jeff, it's after 1 o'clock.
Well, if Mr. Brule is a respectable guy, he'll be home and asleep, and I'm going to wake him up.
Oh, that's well, except for one slight mistake.
Mistake?
Yes. We're going to wake him up.
Yes, what is it?
Oh, good evening, madam. I'm sorry to disturb you, but it's very urgent that I see Mr. Brule.
Ain't no Mr. Brule here, and it ain't evening, it's morning, and you ought to be ashamed. Good night.
Cute kid.
Jeff, are you sure you had the right address?
Absolutely positive. You know, Nancy, it's funny. His mail should be sent to a place where he doesn't even live. I think we ought to check with the post office, you know it?
Darling, not tonight.
Well, no, I guess it can wait till morning.
Here's the clerk now. Go ahead, Jeff. Ask him.
My name is Brule. Andrew Brule, 507 West 12th. I haven't been getting my mail lately. Would you please check and see if there's something wrong?
Mr. Brule, you gave us instructions over a year ago to hold all mail in general delivery. Don't you remember?
Oh, he's so absent-minded.
Well, is that so?
Sometimes he even forgets he's married.
Well, that certainly clears things up for me.
It does?
Mr. Brule, I guess you just forgot. You called up here about an hour ago.
I did?
Surely. You asked if anyone had tried to pick up your mail. Sounded kind of worried, too.
Oh, he's just the worrying type. Come along, dear. There are others waiting. Come on.
Yes. Thanks, old man. Much obliged.
Not at all, Mr. Brule. Don't mention it.
Jeff, what do you think?
I think Mr. Brule is worrying, too. It's pretty clear now, Nancy. He's mixed up in this murder some way, and he knows that we've gotten the line on him. Well, the next thing, I guess he'll come after us.
Jeff, what do we do?
What can we do? Just sit tight and wait. And when he comes, we'll grab him.
Jeff, what time is it now?
Oh, just a few minutes to midnight.
Midnight?
Say, what are you so scared about? We've got all the lights on. I've got my trusty mid-iron here, and... Hey, the lights! Who turned those lights off?
Not me.
There must have been a murderer. The fuse box is out there in the hall.
Jeff, there's something coming through the door.
Steady now. Steady, Nancy. Yeah. All right, you, whoever you are, you better give up. I've got you covered.
I've got him! Jeff!
Nancy, I got him! Give me a hand, will you?
Jeff!
Sock him with something, Nancy!
Yeah.
A chair, anything!
I'm coming, Jeff!
Hit him, Nancy!
I'll help you, darling! There! Take that, you nasty man! Up to teach you to hurt Jeff. I'll teach you to...
Hey. What hit me?
Oh, Jeff, it's you. Oh, darling, I'm sorry. It's so dark in here. Well,
maybe it is, but I can see stars. Hey, the murderer. Where'd he go?
I don't know. That was a door, Jeff. He must have gone out.
Hey, listen. Police whistles. How did the cops get here?
How do you think? I called them this afternoon.
Oh, look, the lights are on again.
They must have fixed the fuse.
Say, did you call the cops or the electricians?
Nice work, Mr. Troy. We nabbed him, all right.
Yeah? Who was it, Inspector?
Mr. Andrew Brule, alias Mr. Lingle.
Mr. Lingle? Who lives upstairs? The one who wanted to help?
Oh, that was a front. Like his art studios were just a front for his blackmailing.
Blackmailing?
Sure. He was collecting from every person in this house, and they didn't know that Brule and Lingle were one and the same.
But how could he blackmail all these people?
Oh, easy enough. Just get something on them that might embarrass them. Funny the things that people will try to hide. Since he only spoke over the phone to them, they never guessed who he was.
Yeah, but what about Kaufman? Why was he killed?
Well, I guess Kaufman was the only one who suspected the truth. And when he insisted on having a showdown, Lingle had to kill him to keep him quiet.
Hmm. Well, I guess that's that case, Inspector. I sure am glad I was in on the finish.
Finish is right, Mr. Troy. Only it might have been yours.
Huh?
We just took this knife off Lingle. Pretty mean looking, isn't it?
Mean? He was going to...
Mr. Troy, he's fainted.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Jeff, open your eyes. Darling, get up. Please get up. You've got to get up, Jeff. You got your good suit on.
This is your FBI. This is your FBI, an official broadcast from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Tonight, the story of a crime against our war effort. Draft dodging.
It's not news when a man is drafted. And notice rarely appears in the nation's newspapers unless that man is a celebrity. It is news, though, when a man is caught trying to evade the draft. And so notice does appear in the paper. That's why it may seem that we have had many draft dodgers in this war. Actually, we haven't. Actually, the number has been very small, particularly when compared to the last war, when 7 out of every 1,000 men were delinquent. When whole areas like Times Square in New York were roped off and slacker raids were common. In this war, instead of 7, only 1 out of each 1,000 eligibles has been delinquent. The FBI has vigorously sought to get men in the Army instead of jail. Those who have tried to make a racket out of the draft have tried many schemes. Some of their victims, like teenage kids just out of high school earning their first real paychecks in war plants, and reluctant in a rather human way, to give up those checks and go to war, have been misled by a vicious type of criminal.
Hey, Rick!
Hmm? Oh, hi, Jeff.
Hey, did you eat lunch yet?
Yeah, I went across the diner.
Oh.
Where'd they get you working?
I'm over in assembly.
Oh? You get the same dough?
Yeah. Oh.
But not as much overtime.
It don't make any difference now, though.
Hmm?
I got that paper this morning.
Oh, what paper's that?
Greetings from Uncle.
Oh.
Yeah. Says I should report for my physical next Monday. That's when you go in.
Yeah.
You should have seen my mother. You'd think I was 2 years old or something, the way she acted. I tried to tell her I ain't the first guy who was ever drafted.
Ah, it stinks.
Huh?
Well, it ain't fair, Chubb. We got good jobs here. We're making real dough. Why don't they give us a break?
Well, the Army needs young guys, Rick.
Yeah, sure.
Look, I don't like the idea either.
Well, why don't we do something about it?
What do you mean? Not report or something?
No.
Then what else?
Well, I ran into a guy last night.
Yeah?
I used to play ball with him over in the park.
Mm-hmm.
He took his physical last month and they flunked him.
What was the matter with him?
Nothing.
I don't get it.
He beat the whole thing on account of some pills he took.
What kind of pills?
I don't know. I bought them off the guy. They made him look like he had a bad heart or something.
He really got away with it, huh?
Yeah, sure. He showed me his card. 4F.
Gee.
I found out from him where to find the guy who sells them pills. hangs out in the bowling alley over on 10th Street.
You could get in trouble on a thing like that.
This fella didn't.
How much are the pills?
I don't know. I was figuring maybe I'd go over that bowling alley night and find out. Want to come?
Well, gee, I don't know.
I'll think it over, Chubb. I'll meet you outside the gate at 5 o'clock.
Would you like to bowl a string, boys?
No, thanks.
We'll shoot a rack of pool, maybe?
Oh, no, we'd rather talk to you someplace, Mr. Butler.
Well, let's sit on these benches at the bank.
Okay, come on, Tim. Yeah, come on.
You work out at the bearing plant, huh?
Yeah.
Must be knocking off plenty of overtime.
We do okay.
Oh, here, sit down.
Oh, thanks.
Now, what can I do for you?
Well, I already told you this. This pal of mine said I should come to see you. It's about them pills.
Oh?
We're both taking our physicals next Monday.
And you just assume not pass them, is that it?
Well, yes.
Oh, I guess maybe we can do some business. Did he tell you the price?
No.
It's $100 a box.
$100? For each of us?
That's right.
That's a lot of dough, mister.
Look, I didn't hustle your business. That's what I charge. Take it or leave it.
Gee.
Now, don't tell me you can't afford it. You're both making a good week's pay.
Yeah, but that's...
You want to beat the draft, or don't you?
Well, yeah.
Sure.
And get it up, boys. I guarantee results.
Well, we don't have that kind of money with us.
When can you get it?
Tomorrow, I guess. How about you, Chubb?
Yeah. Tomorrow's okay.
Swell. You can meet me right here.
Well, how many of the pills do you take?
There's 3 in each box. You take them 6 hours apart the night before your physical.
Do they hurt you?
Hurt you?
Well, no. Do they make you sick or anything?
No, you just get a little dizzy. They'll fool any doctor you go up again.
Well, look, I got to be getting home, chum.
Okay.
You'll be here tomorrow, boys?
Yeah, we'll be here right after work.
Look, I hope we don't get in a jam on this thing, Mr. Butler.
This thing has worked for dozens of guys. There ain't nothing wrong in it. Keeping kids like you out of the army, keeping you from being killed. And that's being patriotic.
Criminals never know when to quit. Never know that a racket can last just so long. In this case, the existence of the racket was exposed when the two boys collapsed during their physical examination and became so violently ill that they had to be taken to a hospital. It was obvious to the army doctors that both boys had taken the same kind of pill. Obvious that both were trying to evade the draft. Obvious that this was a case for the FBI. And so, as soon as the boys had recovered sufficiently, the special agent questioned them at the hospital.
How do you feel, boys?
Not so good.
You, son?
Awful.
Are you well enough to answer a few questions?
About what happened?
Yes. I'd like all the details on where you got those pills.
You tell them, Chubb.
Okay. Well, we got them off a guy who hung around a bowling alley over in 10th Street.
Where on 10th Street?
Right near the corner of Maple Avenue. I don't know the address.
I think it's number 720 10th Street.
I see. Who was this man?
His name was Ralph Butler.
How did you contact him?
A pal of mine told me about him. He said we should go there and see him.
Did he charge you for the pills?
Yes, sir.
How much?
$100.
A piece?
Yes, sir.
Well?
They came 3 in a box, and we took one every 6 hours the night before the physical.
That was some job, too, sir. I had to set the alarm twice during the night.
Well, you're both very lucky. I just read the laboratory report, and the ingredients in those pills might have killed you.
Gee. Are we going to be okay, mister?
Yes, doctors believe you'll recover completely.
Boy, hope so.
Now, can you describe this man, Butler?
Yeah, he's about your size. Tall, I mean.
He was lots fatter, Jim.
Yeah. He was baldy-headed, wore kind of flashy clothes.
How old would you say he was?
Oh, he was real old. Must have been about 40.
Tell about that address he gave us.
What was that?
Well, the second day we went to see him, the day he gave us the pills, he wanted to know if we have any friends he could do business with.
Yes.
Well, he told us he wasn't going to be around the bowling alley anymore. But anyone who wanted the pills could write to him about them.
Where?
The care of General Livery.
I see.
Mister.
Yes?
I guess we're going to get put in jail on account of this, huh?
Well, you've broken the law.
Well, can't you leave Chubb out of this? He didn't want any part of it. This was all my idea.
Son, I'm afraid you're both involved.
We're real suckers.
How do you feel about going in the army now?
Mr., we'd love it.
Yeah.
Well, I'll talk to the U.S. attorney. I won't promise you what the decision will be, but you might have another chance.
This was not the first time that such a case had cropped up for the FBI. Not even the first time it had cropped up in this particular city. A watch was set up at the bowling alley, but the man did not return. However, special agents had another lead. A real lead. They had a description of the man responsible, and they had a way to reach him. That way was through the post office. The agents waited and watched there every day and every night. Waited for someone to pick up a letter. A letter addressed to Mr. Ralph Butler in care of General Delivery. Early in the afternoon of the fourth day, someone did pick up a letter for Ralph Butler. Not a rather stout, bald-headed man, but a sallow, sandy-haired boy. Two agents followed him carefully to a building in the business district, watched him go into an office on the third floor, and then stopped him in the hall as he came out.
Excuse me, son.
Huh?
You just delivered the letter to that officer?
Yes, sir.
Who accepted it?
Nobody.
You mean there's no one in there?
That's right. I put it on the desk and left.
Who asked you to deliver the letter?
Some man I met on the street.
Huh?
He said I should pick up a letter addressed to Mr. Ralph Butler at the general delivery window in the post office.
Yes?
He asked me to bring it here to this doctor's office, and he gave me a quarter.
Well, this man who asked you to do the errand, was he about my height, son, rather stout, bald-headed?
Yeah, that's him.
Thanks, son.
Okay, sir.
Come on, Perry. Let's take a look at this office.
Right.
This must be the doctor that Butler told his other customers about.
The one who made the pills.
Yes. Dr. Woodbury's Health Club. Let's go in, Perry.
Right. Not exactly an elaborate layout.
No. Well, this is apparently the anteroom. Let's see what's in the next office.
Look at those charts on the wall. Typical quack equipment.
Yeah. Go ahead, Perry.
Thanks. Well, at least there's a desk in here.
But no doctor.
What do we do now?
Just wait. Someone should tune up for that letter. I have a hunch it won't...
Wait.
Oh, who are you?
We're waiting for Dr. Woodbury.
Oh, is the doctor out?
Yes.
Well, I guess I better wait too, then.
You work here?
No.
Are you a patient?
No, I've come here about my son.
I see.
Is the doctor treating you, ma'am?
Yes. That is, I think he is.
What do you mean?
Well, how much do you know about Dr. Woodbury?
Very little.
Are you patients of his?
No.
Do you intend to be?
Well...
I certainly wouldn't advise it.
Oh, why not?
Well, there's something funny about his business.
How's that?
My son came to see the doctor here, and he gave him some pills. He told my boy that they'd keep him out of the army.
Was he about to be drafted?
Yes.
Did he take the pills?
Oh, no, I wouldn't let him.
You were very wise.
I came here today to find out what that doctor was up to.
Have you ever seen him?
No.
Did your son describe him?
No, but I guess he could.
I think we could have the doctor investigated for you, Mrs.
Scott. Are you from the police?
We can notify them for you, Mrs. Scott. Now, would you just write down your address?
Oh, surely.
Here's a pencil.
Someone will call around and have a talk with your son.
Oh, this won't get him in trouble.
No. Well, that is if he doesn't take those pills.
Well, I'll certainly take care of that right now. I'll go home this very minute. And thanks, both of you.
Thank you, Mrs. Scott.
What do we do now?
The doctor must have just stepped out for a moment, so we just wait.
That you, Cora?
Yes.
I thought you were going to stay in the office this afternoon.
I had company.
Who?
Two very inquisitive gentlemen. They had to be from the law.
What do they want?
They were looking for Dr. Woodbury.
How do you know?
They told me.
What is this?
I went down the hall for a minute. When I came back, they were waiting in my office.
Didn't I tumble?
No.
Why not?
I told them I was just a visitor myself. I said I'd come to see the doctor about my son.
Did they buy it?
Of course. They're probably still waiting for the doctor.
Well, that's that.
What do you mean?
Looks like we got to find a new touch.
Why?
I ain't putting my neck out. By the time this time they've got a full description of me, the racket, and how it operates. I must have tailed that kid who picked up the letter.
Yeah.
It ain't going to take them too long to find out that you're Dr. Woodbury.
But that doesn't put us out of business. All we do is change names and locations.
Now, wait a minute, honey.
Now, look. They stopped calling older men in the draft. They're concentrating on youngsters. That makes it just perfect for us.
We can't peddle them pills anymore. The FBI will take care of that.
I can make other things besides pills. Now, let's pack, honey. We'll find a new location, new suckers, and start all over again.
The element of surprise is as important to FBI agents working on a case as it is to generals fighting a war. Complete victory may not be won by surprise, but the enemy is invariably weakened seriously. The mythical Dr. Woodbury was not trapped by the unexpected appearance of FBI agents in her office, but she was forced to move fast, forced to run, forced to leave conclusive proof of her medical work. After obtaining a search warrant, the special agents found that proof in a cabinet in the office. Found it in the form of dozens of white boxes carefully inscribed, "Take one pill every 6 hours." They took the boxes to the FBI laboratory.
You busy, Morgan?
No. Come on in, Perry.
I've just gotten a report from the laboratory on that batch of pills we found in Dr. Woodbury's office.
Same story?
Yes, more or less. They found that the ingredients varied in each pill. Good thing some of them didn't get into circulation.
Bad as that?
A couple were powerful enough to kill a horse.
Nice business.
Yes. Did you get anything more on Dr. Woodbury?
Just completed a check.
What's the story?
That office was rented 2 months ago. The real estate agent said the lease was signed by a woman.
Who was she?
Dr. Woodbury.
What?
That's who she claimed to be. I've checked with the medical association. They have no record of it.
Excuse me.
Morgan speaking.
Yes.
Yes, wait a minute. Let me check that address again. Perry, would you hand me that paper there?
Yeah, Shelley, here you go.
Thanks. It's Mrs. Scott, 217 Fairview Avenue. Is that check? I see. Thanks, goodbye.
That Scott woman, the one we met in the doctor's office, gave us a fictitious address.
Well,
wait a minute.
What are you looking for? One of the pill boxes we found in the doctor's office. Oh, here we are. Perry, take a look at her handwriting.
Yes.
Now compare it with this handwriting on the box. Take one pill every 6 hours.
I'd say they match.
And I'd say we were fooled, completely fooled.
Yes.
Just to be sure, let's get a comparison on this from the laboratory.
It was simple for the laboratory to confirm what the agents had suspected. Mrs. Scott had written the directions on the boxes of pills. Mrs. Scott was Dr. Woodbury. But Mrs. Scott had disappeared, and although a description was sent out, there was no trace of her for 2 days. And then at 3:30 on a bright sunny afternoon, a trace of Mrs. Scott's work appeared. In a nearby city, a small coupe was driving along a street. An empty street, a street clean of traffic, of people, except one policeman. A street a car should have no trouble driving down. A street with high stone buildings on either side.
Are you all right, man? Are you all right? Are you okay, mister?
My eyes.
Did you get glass on them?
No. Let me get out, will you?
Wait a minute. You should have some broken bones, why?
I don't think I have. I seem to be able to move everything all right.
Well, then let me give you a hand here. Here you are. Take it easy now. Easy does it. There we are. That's it. You sure you're okay?
Yes, I'm okay.
I watched you coming across that viaduct. When you got to this end, you started driving in circles.
I know.
Have you been drinking, mister?
No.
Then what happened? No one cut you off. In fact, there was no traffic coming at you at all.
I know.
Well, did something go wrong with the car?
No, sir. It was just my eyes.
Hey, wait a minute. Let me have a look at him.
Hmm. They're all red and inflamed.
They hurt so I can barely see.
Look, are you sure you haven't been drinking?
Of course not. I've been taking a physical at the pre-induction center all day.
At the police station, something was found on the man who had been in that accident. Something that made the local police contact the FBI. That something was a small box containing a bottle of homemade eye drops.
The laboratory analyzed the ingredients in the bottle. What's the story?
Well, it looks like something a kid might put together with a homemade chemistry set.
Huh?
Quite a mixture.
Could it simulate an inflammation of the eyes?
According to the report, the man stands a good chance of being permanently blinded.
I see.
That box the bottle of eye drops came in.
Yes?
Something had been blocked out on the cover.
I noticed that.
The laboratory worked it up and found some handwriting underneath.
What did it say?
Wait, I have a report on it here someplace. Oh, yes. There it is. Read it.
Take one pill every 6 hours.
Now the FBI knew Mrs. Scott was working again and had simply changed her product and shifted her operations to another city. But where was she? They knew she and her partner Ralph Butler had only been in the city 2 days. Knew they couldn't have had time to get either an apartment or an office. Knew that they must be staying in a hotel. So the agents began checking the hotels, went to one after another with a description of Mrs. Scott and Ralph Butler. Went carefully down the list until at last they found a small, shabby apartment hotel which had recently rented a room to a couple answering the description. But the FBI didn't count on the description alone. They compared the woman's signature on the hotel ledger with the handwriting of the woman they were looking for. Then they were sure. Then they knew. They had found Mrs. Scott.
Ralph! You going to sleep all day?
Well, look, I've done my work.
You were out for exactly 3 hours this morning.
Sure, but I set up some real good contacts.
Like what?
I made a connection with a guy who owns a candy store right across the street from a local high school.
Well?
He's a real larceny bum. He's going to handle our business.
For the kids in the school?
Yeah.
So that makes you an executive now, is that it?
Well, you can talk to them punks better than I can.
That's only one contact. There's still work for you to do.
Look, if I hustle around, we'll wind up in the same jam we got in before.
Not if you watch your step. Now, come on, get up.
Okay.
I want you to run out the store for me.
What for?
I need some more powder.
I thought you sent the bellhop out for that.
I asked him to go an hour ago, and he said he'd get it when he had time. That could take all day.
What are you making now?
Oh, I'm just fooling around with something.
What is it?
I'm trying to put together something that'll work on a man's nervous system.
I see.
You remember that quack I used to work for out in Cleveland?
Yeah?
Well, he had some stuff that'd make a man shake all over like he had St. Vitus dance or something.
Uh-huh.
Trying to remember how he did it.
Look, why don't you just stay with the stuff for the eye?
You gotta keep switching them around. That's what keeps us out in front.
Who's that?
Probably that bellhop.
Oh, good. Save me a trip.
Let him in, will you?
Okay. Yes?
Here's them powders.
Oh, thanks.
Just a minute, Mr. Butler. Huh? I want to talk to you.
Who are you?
We're special agents of the FBI.
Cora!
I heard them.
Is this your son, Mrs. Scott?
No.
You know why we're here?
Yes.
Want to pay for the powder, lady?
No. We won't be needing it.
In times like these, there is little difference between a spy and a criminal who aids draft dodgers, because both are fighting this war not for us, but for the enemy. To the FBI, there is no difference between a spy and a criminal who aids draft dodgers, because both are violating the laws of our government. Both are a threat to the nation, and both must be caught. The spy case may be more sensational, may get more space in the newspapers, but the FBI devotes as much time, as much resource, as much energy to a lesser case if necessary. Because every federal case is a case against the people of this entire country. And the FBI is a protector of the people.
This is wonderful. The woman I love living right upstairs.
Oh, stop, Costello. You're not in love with Susan. She's just a passing fancy.
Abbott, I wouldn't pass up anything that fancy. Gee, but I hope she likes her room.
Oh, she should like it. She gets bored with it.
I'm glad to hear that, too, because after all... What did you say?
I said she should be happy she gets bored with the room.
If she gets bored with the room, then why does she rent it in the first place?
She's not bored with the room. She's very happy.
You just told me that she gets bored with the room.
That's right.
One of us is nuts. How can a girl be happy when she's bored all the time?
Look, she's not bored all the time. No. She only gets bored 3 times a day.
Where is she getting all that lumber?
I'm not talking about lumber. I'm talking about board. Susan eats her board.
Who feeds her all these boards?
A landlady. Susan made arrangements with the landlady to eat her board 3 times a day. 30 days a month.
I'm moving out of that place.
Why?
That Susan Miller is going to eat me out of house and home.
Yes, and I'm just trying to tell you that Susan is very happy with her board and she likes her room. That room hasn't got a flaw in it.
There's a cute kid. Just rented the room today already. She ate the floor.
She did not eat the floor. I simply said there was no floor in the room.
You could be mistaken, you know. Anybody that will eat boards 3 times a day is liable to eat the floor and the doors and the windows.
Look, what are you getting so excited about? What business is it of yours what she does with her room?
I'll make it my business, brother. Her floor happens to be my ceiling. I don't mind you knocking the props from under me every week, but I ain't going to let that Susan Miller eat the roof over my head.
Costello, you annoy me. All I said was there is not a flaw in Susan's room.
Just a second, Abbott. Have you been to Susan's room?
I have.
You opened up the door?
Yes.
You stepped into the room?
I did.
What did you step on?
The floor.
Ladies and gentlemen, this man has deliberately and with molasses aforethought been misinforming the public. I rest my case.
All right, Costello, there's no sense in getting yourself into a frenzy.
A what?
Frenzy.
I ain't make up frenzies with nobody.
Now, wait a minute. I'll try to explain by giving you an example. You have a floor in your room. The plaster is all cracked, so you have a floor in your ceiling.
I got a floor in my ceiling? How do you like that? I've been living upside down for 6 years and didn't know it.
Costello, you're all mixed up. I'm trying to tell you that Susan's room is perfect. It has no floor, and she's happy because she gets bored with the room.
Here we go again.
The reason why she likes to get bored with the room is because she's hungry after a hard day at the studio and rushes home and eats like a beaver.
Now he's got her eating beaver board.
Costello, I don't know why I get into these arguments with you. We argue and fight, and it always ends up the same way. You're just plain stupid.
I am not. I'm pretty smart.
Costello, if you're smart, I'm a monkey's uncle.
Well, I am smart. Now let me see you hang by your tail.
One of our planes was missing, 2 hours overdue. One of our planes was missing with all its gallant crew. The radio sets were humming, they waited for a word. Then a voice broke through the humming, and this is what they heard. Coming in on a wing and a prayer. Coming in on a wing and a prayer. Though there's one motor gone, we can still carry on. We're coming in on a wing and a prayer. What a show! Boy, what a fight! Say, we really hit our target for tonight. We sing as we limp through the air. Look below, there's a field over there. With our full crew aboard and our trust in the Lord, we're coming home on a wing and a prayer.
Thank you.
Of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
And you are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 103.1, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge. The door is slowly closing for Radio Masterpieces, but be sure and tune in again next week from 9 to 10 p.m. to listen to more wonderful mysteries from the 1940s and 50s. This is Bruce Kaplan signing off. Radio Masterpieces is a Seattle Miracle Incorporated production.